I'm Brian.
I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your source for the information and inspiration to help you start, manage, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. This is episode 224. Welcome, Brian.
Welcome back, Griff.
It's been since before the holidays.
Since we've recorded.
Yeah, we haven't been in the studio for 3 weeks.
But our listeners heard us on Tuesday.
You mean our listener?
Our listener. Thank you for listening, our listener out there.
We have one listener, that we're sure. So we always address the show to that one listener. It's you. It's you who is listening. You're listening right now. You are our listener. You asked who our guest was?
Yes, who is our guest this week?
We have two guests. Mark Yeager of TaxAct returns to share tax filing tips for small businesses, and we're going to have a check-in with one of our favorite sellers of all time, Queen of Auction, Lynn Drowley.
Two very good guests this week.
Always look forward to talking to both. And of course, Mark's turning into a regular, as is Lynn. She's on every 6 months. But Mark, he's the VP of Operations for TaxAct, and he's got a lot of great information. So we've scheduled several shows for the next few months, where Mark is going to come on and talk about different aspects of running a business from the finance point of view.
Which is appropriate at this time of year.
This is the time of year, if you haven't already started, that you want to start working on your taxes for April 15th. You don't want to put it off. You don't. No. Even if you're normally a procrastinator, it's best to start now. I used to procrastinate.
Yeah, I still do a little bit, but my tax guy kind of, you know, makes sure I get everything in on time.
Yeah. Rob makes me get it on time. He's ruthless when it comes to preparation. So
that's
I can
good.
No longer afford to procrastinate, because he'll just stand there with his hands on his hips looking at me saying, well, are you not going to do your taxes? You have 3 months. When are you going to do them?
When there's 2 months?
I'm filing for an extension. Chill out. Well, Brian, do we have any news this week?
We do have some news this week. And our listener may have already heard this, but we want to reiterate it. The Internal Revenue Service has announced a one-year delay of the new $600 tax reporting threshold to help ease the transition to the new reporting requirements for taxpayers, tax professionals, and online marketplaces. As a result, for tax year 2022, only eBay sellers who exceed the reporting threshold of $20,000 and 200 transactions, had backup withholding applied in 2022, or are residents of states that have a lower reporting threshold, will receive a Form 1099-K. And the delay does not affect your income tax reporting obligations. For more information on this, check the announcement board from December 29th at ebay.com/announcements.
You know what the word on the street is? Well, after this came out, there were some sellers who are convinced that agents from IRS were lurking and reading all of the community and Facebook groups where people were complaining about this, and they thought, maybe we should give it another year. Although we can't say for certain that this was a direct causation. Correlation is not causation, as we know.
Right.
Keep complaining. It seems to get things done.
And I think we have professionals at this company who are working with the appropriate people at the federal government, trying to like make this appropriate for all. And as we say, you know, everyone's responsible for paying their taxes. This isn't about whether you pay your taxes or not. It's about whether you get a 1099 and get confused about it.
I'm sure government relations, our government relations team, they made a really good point to the people in charge, saying this was too much too fast. And it's just causing a lot of fear and consternation. So
I also think the elimination of the 200 transaction threshold was the thing that threw me, because it kind of said, you know, you could sell one item for $600 and now you're going to get a 1099. That seems a little over the top.
I agree. And
but
we'll see what happens for 2024.
Yes, I'm luckily... For everybody out there, I am not in Congress making the rules.
Okay. Nice to know, Brian. So that's all the news you have, huh?
Taxes.
Well, talking of taxes, we're going to talk with Mark later. But before we talk to Mark, let's meet our first official guest for the week. Brian, what better way to start off the new year with a check-in with one of our favorite sellers in the whole world? She's smart. She's sassy. She's always up. She's the queen of auctions. All hail Her Majesty, the indefatigable Lynn Drowley.
Welcome back, Lynn.
Hey, guys. So nice to be here.
It's great to have you back.
I always look forward to talking to you.
And I think your intro was apropos for Lynn.
I did see Brian, though, earlier this year last year at the LA Live event, and he didn't recognize me, Griff. He had to read my name tag.
Brian?
I don't know if that's true.
It's true.
She would know.
I think that happened with almost everybody there, because it had been 3 years since I'd seen people in person.
Yeah, it was
well,
funny.
Actually, for you, I think it, I don't know how many years it's been. It's been longer than three.
Probably.
It was well before COVID.
Yeah, we need another real eBay Live.
I agree. I'm hopeful that we're going to be out on the road a little bit more this year. At least I will be.
We miss all that a lot,
you know? Yeah. I miss it too, even though it gets harder. And
as you get older, it's harder and harder to do that sort of traveling.
We'll drag you along once in a while, like we did to Las Vegas. That was a good event.
Yeah, I get dragged there, literally.
The Boss Reseller Remix was great. We met some wonderful sellers, and Katie and Vicky are great. So
it's good. Hey, Lynn, are you going to any events planned, or is it too early in the year?
Well, what do you guys got going on?
I don't know. We haven't really announced.
I don't think we've done the calendar yet.
Yeah. Our plans for this year haven't been finalized.
Yeah. All I've got is for my 60th birthday, I'm going to Greece and Croatia.
Oh. When is that?
When is it?
Yeah.
July.
July what day, Lynn?
I'm not telling. And I think I'm going to take my kids, which would be super fun. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Have you been there before?
No, I have not. Nor Croatia.
I haven't either. And Greece is definitely on my list of places to go. And I've been to a lot of places, but I've not yet gone to Greece.
Of course, you're going in July, so it's going to be hot.
I know. That's okay.
Yeah. Are you going to Santorini?
You're moving to Palm Desert.
Look who's talking.
Especially in July.
Yeah, but I don't go out. I stay inside.
And I don't think there's an ocean just outside the hotel.
Okay, so Greece is going to be 88 degrees in July. Palm Desert's going to be 128.
I know. Please don't rub it in.
But by then, you'll have those little sprinkler things on his deck. The misters.
No. I'm in the house with the air conditioning on.
No.
I'm in the house with the air conditioning on anyway, so.
Graf, do you remember years ago we were sitting having lunch and you said something about you need some misters? And I was like, no, I need a mister. Do you remember that?
Trust me, we all need misters, plural. I had a mister. Someone gave me a mister. It's in the backyard still. I've never used it. And San Jose, what do you need a mister for?
You don't. Like Pacific breezes. 3 days in September.
Yeah, I'm in the house. Lynn, let's get down to business. We had a holiday season just in.
So how was the holiday shopping season, Lynn?
This year's been really tough. Like, really tough. This has been a bad year, but you know, I'm going to only look at the positive and turn it around for next year. But I was so focused this year on opening my clothing store behind the, you know, the furniture store. I didn't list on eBay very much. Mo, my assistant of 20 years, you know Mo, she did all the listings. So my eBay business was down 30 grand last year. I dropped 30%, you guys. And then my store business was even. But if I take out the 70,000 I did in the new clothing store, I dropped 70,000 or 20%. Yeah, so we're in a recession. We are. And it's affecting things. I did sit down with Mo and I said, we have to figure out how to fix this next year. And she's like, you need to go back to estate sales. I've been doing all my thrifting and sourcing at thrift stores. And that's not working as well as the estate sales. The estate sales and garage sales, I've got to get back on that path. And I've got to do more of the listing because it's the unique, quirky stuff that I know from the 50 years of being with my grandma. You know what I mean? So yeah, so you guys, it was tough. And I really noticed things that we're selling were just very small items. People were not spending a lot of money this year. We would sell like 100 tiny things for $10 each, you know, in the main store. And then on eBay, I was doing a lot of just single silverware things. Nobody was spending big bucks. I didn't spend a lot of money on my family this year either. I think that was kind of a trend this year. I went crazy last year, so had to scale it back.
In some of the groups that I'm in, you know, in the eBay community and on Facebook, there's been some discussion. But it's interesting. There are sellers who will pop in and say they had a great year, and then others not. And so I think some things probably did better given there was less money to be spent and then others.
I would totally agree with that. I'm also starting to list clothing on eBay. And I think that's
new for you.
I've always dabbled in it, but never. I'm going to go hardcore because with this clothing store in the back, when things expire, I can get them for really cheap prices. And the only problem with listing clothing is what's kept me from doing it is it's so labor intensive. The measurements, putting it on the dress form, and then the actual listing with all those items specific. So I've figured out a plan and I'm so excited about it. I'm having Cindy, who's my eBay helper, write everything up, do all the measurements on the clothes. I take the bins back to the girls that work in the back. And while it's slow back there, they're dressing mannequins, taking pictures, and take the picture of the ISL sheet. And then I'm emailing it all to my virtual assistant in the Philippines. And she is listing for me the clothing and she's doing a really good job. And I'm super excited. I actually have one dress up that has some bids. If I can share an item with you.
Yeah, sure.
It's 404-092-731-249. and then tell me what you see.
Ooh, it's a dress. Is it velvet?
Laura
Ashley. Yeah, Laura Ashley.
Yeah, and it's made in the Great Britain, in the UK. It's made in the Great Britain.
As opposed to the Lesser Britain.
These are the dresses that I wore when I was a sorority girl at USC back in the late 80s. This is so vintage, and it's already up to $51, and it's got like 38 people looking at it. And it's crazy to me. So I need to look for these kinds of just really unique things, you know?
And it's so interesting that you showed this example, because it's a unique item, which is the perfect type of item for auction.
It is.
Yes,
perfect.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's been proven out here. As of today, which is, we're looking at this on January 6th, this is up to $51.
Isn't that cool?
And there's still 6 days left.
Yeah. And what I have to mention too is, this is a dress that a consigner brought in. And you know, guys, it's really hard to sell on eBay for other people, as you guys know, and we've seen over the years, and the eBay pop-up stores come and go. It's just too hard, because what I've found is some things that I might list might take a year to 5 years to sell. And if I've got a consigner that's like, why, you know, where's my money? Where's my money? I want to wait for the right buyer. What I'm starting to do is just buy things outright to put on eBay, you know, when things come in through the store or, you know, in the clothing store, I'll buy them outright. If it's something that I think can sell fast at auction, like this dress, I will put it on for a consigner. But you know, there's so many issues involved with that. I sold a piece of artwork for a friend, $2,500. It arrived broken. And then a high value claim department immediately gave them their money back. So here I have this painting that doesn't belong to me that we took to FedEx and paid them to pack. So it was packed really well. And then because eBay had paid him out, he didn't cooperate with me at all to get the insurance money. Oh, Griff. Somehow I finally got a check, and then I didn't even tell my friend that it had sold. And this was like 6 months later, I finally gave him his money because I didn't want to tell him what was going on.
It was
gnarly. And I don't think I'm going to sell any high end stuff like that anymore.
This was a painting?
It was like a limited edition piece of art.
Like a sculpture maybe, or?
No. It was glass. It was framed.
And so it got damaged.
Yes, the glass broke and then scraped on the actual artwork, so it wasn't repairable.
Ooh.
But yeah, that was a tough one, guys. Yeah.
The risks of being in business, they could be substantial. When you start talking about high-value items.
Yeah, and that's what you want, though. You want high-value items.
Well, because the profit margin, yeah.
Yeah, they better belong to you.
Lynn, it sounds like you have got like almost like this really open mind, and you're almost like pivoting in real time. Buying items instead of just consigning, auction, looking at the inventory that's coming in the store differently than you did before.
This woman never stands still. What are you so surprised?
I always think of Lynn, and she's got her consignment store and she does stuff on eBay, and it's all this other stuff going on this year.
But you've got to be able to pivot like that, Brian. I've got to look and see, why did I drop 30 grand on eBay and I would have dropped 70,000 in my brick and mortar without the clothes? I got to figure it out. Because I'm going to want to retire, like, by the time I'm 80.
Why retire? What are you going to do?
I know. I don't think I ever will. It's too much fun.
It is.
This is my 25th year on eBay.
Yeah, me too. 26, but yeah.
That is fantastic.
No, you got to be on eBay longer, Griff, because you started in 95.
96, not 95.
Okay. Well, because I started in 98, so this is my 25th year. Is that crazy? And I only ever took 1 week off.
A week?
And when I moved from Bellingham, Washington to California, I actually took a week off and closed my store. It's the only time.
Oh, my heavens.
I know. Isn't that crazy? I have 18,000 things listed now.
Do you use time away now? Do you take some time off?
No, because I've got Mo working for me. I got Cindy working for me. You know,
you have employees. So it's, you don't have to completely close the door and lock it.
No. You guys were really helpful, though. Thank you. When my mom wound up in the hospital with that time away, that worked really well for us.
Yeah, that really is a good thing. It only took about 20 years to get right, but hey.
And is it even right now?
There's always room for improvement, right?
Okay.
It's usable.
Okay, good. I found this too.
So I'm sorry to hear that business was down, but how is that going to drive? You talked about clothing and selling more clothing. Are you looking at other avenues or plans to make 2023 more profitable?
Oh, yeah. I'm really looking at my bottom line and my costs, and I'm cutting everything out that I can. And we're really going down to more of a skeleton crew in staff, because really last year, my staffing, I had to put someone in the back store and then I had two people in the front store. So my payroll went through the roof. I really analyzed it and I realized that most of our clothing sales were Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So now the clothing store is only open Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And it's saving me 3 days of payroll back there, and it has not affected our sales.
Oh, good.
So wow. That's been a really positive thing. You know, I'm also looking to get back to, you know, going out to those estate sales. And I was going to go this morning and there weren't any, so I'm going to go tomorrow morning. But yeah, I need to get back in the trenches. I took a year off to work on the clothing store and I didn't focus that much on eBay. So that's my bad too.
Is it a separate entrance or is it you have to go through the consignment shop?
It's a separate entrance. There's the main store that's like 4,500 square feet. And then you go through the parking lot. And then there's this cute little building back there that we put in hardwood floors and chandeliers. And it's the clothing boutique and it's about 500 square feet.
Oh, wow.
You guys got to come visit. I know.
Well, next time.
Yeah, next time.
I appreciate that.
Lynn, we come to you a lot for advice because you have not only a reputation of being a very successful and happy seller, but even when you've had a bad year, apparently, but you've also spent a lot of time coaching and advising and publishing how to do this, how to run a business the way that you do. Do you have any advice to give to our single loan listener?
It's a poor listener.
Poor listener out there.
Just keep doing it. I always say, try to list as many things a week as you can. And it's like throwing balls in the air or something's going to work. Do you know what I mean? You just got to keep on listing. And it's so important to get that new, fresh merchandise.
Well, Lynn, I want to thank you so much. It's always a pleasure.
Great to talk to you guys.
Thanks, Lynn.
Lynn Drolley sells on eBay under the user ID, the Queen of Auctions. As always, we'll put a link to her eBay store in the summary overview for this episode. Only 3 more months, Brian.
3 more months till what, Griff?
Only 3 more months to my favorite time of the year, tax time.
Favorite time of the year? Are you insane?
Not really. It wasn't always my favorite time of the year. In fact, I used to dread it.
What changed your mind, Griff?
Knowledge changed my mind, Brian. That and having hired a bona fide CPA to do my taxes every year. I just send her all the paper. She does all the work. But I have to admit, though, knowledge about how taxes work helped play a big role in me adjusting how I feel about April 15th.
You sound like you joined the April 15th cult.
Yeah, maybe. But never mind. Our next guest is a font of tax knowledge. Mark Yeager is the Vice President of Operations at Tax Act, and he's back this week to talk about a topic near and dear to every seller on eBay, taxes. And this week, he's here to provide some tips for filing your taxes for 2022 and beyond. Welcome, Mark.
Welcome, Mark.
Hi, guys. How's it going? And taxes. Yes, it is definitely tax time. And did you guys know that taxes is one of the top three most important problems for small businesses in the U.S.? Of course, the big ones right now, inflation, quality of labor, right? Going through COVID and everything that's kind of disrupting our supply chain. But nonetheless, taxes is still in the top three overall. So really, taxes impact the business in every which way you can imagine.
That's why we're so glad you're here.
Yes.
That's right. So the exact amount of taxes a small business, it'll vary, right? Whether you're in a certain state or really based off your business structure. But really, small businesses that file their taxes late, inaccurately, or ignore them altogether are going to face fines. So when we're excited about talk about taxes, we want to make sure we do it right.
Absolutely.
Griff kind of riffed on the whole knowledge thing. How important is it to be in the know?
Yeah, so that's my first big tip. Invest in your tax and finance knowledge. So really, it's about spending time learning key tax and finance topics so you have a better understanding of tax implications and how to take advantage of those benefits. So just learning common terms, just right. Any business, you should understand common terms as it relates to taxes and finance. Revenue, the amount of money earned through product sales. Cost of goods sold, the cost of producing products sold by your business. Gross profit, the money left over after subtracting the cost of goods sold from total revenue. And net sales, which is the total profit made after deducting all expenses from revenue.
Yeah, it's like a big funnel, right? It starts out with all that money that comes into your payment processor and it keeps narrowing down after you take out the expenses of the goods or the services and then the deductibles, and then you get what you're going to live on.
That's right. That's right.
So talking about money always gives me the warm fuzzies. What's the first thing I should know about money, specifically business finances?
Yeah, the most important thing is, well, you got to keep business and personal separate. So it's going to be really important that you create a structure of your finances that keep the business side and your personal side apart. Otherwise, you have lots of problems that could happen. So really, the first thing I would say is create a bank account solely for your business. It's really one of the quickest ways to get into tax trouble, as I mentioned, is having personal expenses recorded as business expenses. The separate bank accounts for business and personal transactions makes tax time easier. You'll have clean, accurate records.
We often hear from our sellers that they're confused about what they should be tracking and recording. And I'm sure you hear it too, Mark. How important is it to keep track of your purchases and expenses?
Yeah, it's absolutely critical in order to have a good functioning business and to stay out of trouble with the IRS. So really, it's about making sure you pull those bank statements to reconcile income and outgoing with your receipts or your invoices. It's using accounting software to help automate that task overall, right? You do this all manually. You might transpose a number here or there, whereas if you use a software, they're going to more or less keep you in line with what you're supposed to be doing.
I know all about the transposing.
That just happens, you know, anytime you're doing anything manually. Really, you want to be careful with how you record or reconcile expenses. So an example of that is giving out free samples should be counted as a marketing expense and not simply marked as inventory shrinkage overall. That's a marketing activity that you're doing, and you just want to make sure, you know, from the IRS standpoint, that they understand where you're tracking expenses properly overall. And then lastly, I would say just accurate reporting on your financial statements just helps you to understand how your business is doing. So when you're evaluating at the end of the year in preparation for tax filing, you're looking at the right information. Mm-hmm. So you know what you're utilizing in marketing spend versus inventory adjustments, as we laid out in that example. And you just know, hey, at the end of the year, you should always reconcile. Obviously, the taxes help with that, but then you kind of get a better understanding from your business to say, hey, should I be spending a little bit more on this side or should I be spending a little bit less heading into the next year?
Luckily, like I said, I have a CPA. I just let her do all the reconciling. And if there's a mistake, she lets me know.
And did you separate your account, Griff?
I do. I have an absolute separate account for eBay sales now, and it has made a huge difference in having to report at the end of the year. I did that about 3 years ago, and it was a very smart thing to do. You know, Mark, one aspect regarding taxes that confuses me no end is the estimated quarterly tax payments. Now, is there some threshold that determines who has to make these quarterly payments?
Not necessarily. I mean, it's going to depend on each person's tax situation. So it could be how much you owe year to year as to whether you want to make those quarterly estimated tax payments. The IRS requires small businesses that predict to owe more than $1,000 in taxes at the end of the financial year to make quarterly tax payments. But some of that can be balanced out, right? You think about if you have a job, you're an employer while you're doing this small business, a side hustle in a way. The withholdings you have from that job could help offset whether you need to do quarterly payments. But if you don't, and this is really your gig, this is your business, this is what you're doing full time, it's really about understanding that estimate of your year-end tax bill and contributing to the year-end accounts by filing that Form 1040-ES. And I'll say that one more time, Form 1040-ES, because that really provides you the vouchers. Or if you file it with your taxes, it might provide you a way to do it electronically with your quarterly payments for April 15th. Quarter one, June 15th, quarter two, September 15th, quarter three, and January 15th is quarter four. And those dates are subject to change based off whether it falls on a weekend, but it's only usually by a day or two. Yeah, go ahead.
I remember in the past that my account, when I had to do this before, you know, I was not working for eBay, she would give me four forms all ready to go with the envelopes.
Yes. Yeah. It's just kind of become standard at that point. It's here's the forms. Hopefully it has a dollar amount written on it so you know well enough in advance what you need to pay. And you get that thing mailed in. That's right. And then really sole proprietors for reporting business on Schedule C or business income on Schedule C, at the end of the day, typically should make those quarterly payments because it needs to include not only the income tax that you earn, so like the money you earned on the income for the year, but then there's also the self-employment tax. When you think about your share of FICA, Medicare, Social Security taxes that you have to pay as the employee and as the employer.
You want to pay that. Because when it comes time to collecting Social Security, if you didn't pay enough in, you ain't going to get enough out.
That's right.
So think of it as money well invested.
It's probably also really smart for people to do this because it saves them from having a big tax bill in a year. They kind of portion it out. I'm sure there's other reasons the government wants it, but from just managing your finances through the year, it's also smart.
Now, I know that if you owe a lot and you don't use quarterly, they can fine and penalize you.
I think they can.
Yeah, and those interest rates are going up.
Of course, everything is.
You know what's another topic I can't understand?
What's that?
Knowing what is and what isn't tax deductible.
Ooh.
Mark, any thoughts?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's always an interesting topic all the time. So every business owner really needs to know what is and what isn't tax deductible. I mean, just from a pure logic standpoint here, you make the money, but you want to pay as little as taxes on it as possible, right? So the lower your profitability, the less tax you'll pay. That's just how the system works. So obviously, one way to reduce the profit of your business is the business-related items around those expenses. So understanding what's deductible and not deductible will help lower your tax bill overall. Just to throw out this terminology that the IRS uses, it's called what is ordinary and what is necessary expenses for your business. Ordinary, just to kind of hit on that one really quickly, is something that's commonly used by other businesses in your industry. So an example I'll say is, hey, if you're doing a podcast for a business overall and you try to deduct a haircut that you got, I'm guessing most people who run their own podcast business probably aren't deducting haircuts, right, to do their job. That's probably something that's not ordinary
as it relates to your industry.
As
a bald guy.
Yes, yes. And then necessary. So what's helpful or assists you in growing the business, right? So it could be that, hey, I own a fishing business that ultimately takes people out and gives them a fun time going out fishing. Obviously, if I need to invest in a boat to take people out to do the fishing, that's something that's absolutely necessary for your business to be able to support those individuals
It's a step up from inner tubes.
Yes. Yeah, it's just a step up.
And some of those things that are obviously necessary, anything shipping supplies and packing supplies, those kinds of things are necessary to ship. So they would be necessary, not necessarily ordinary.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And just to go through, I know we named a few, but some common allowable expenses just overall. And you might see this on the Schedule C form if you go to complete that each year. Your inventory, you know, you'll have inventory of product that you have sitting somewhere in a warehouse or at the house. Marketing expenses, payroll expenses, utilities, commercial leases, legal fees, insurance, shipping and delivering costs, as we mentioned, retail packaging, home office deduction if you're doing it at home, and just other equipment you use to kind of move the material or the goods around.
Yeah, and home deduction is interesting because you have to figure out a percentage of the amount of space you're using. And if you have a mortgage or a rent, isn't it true that you can take that percentage as a deductible? But you have to be really precise about it.
That one is very precise, and the IRS, I will say, looks for that deduction each year. And if you use the standard deduction, it's a little more straightforward and easy to do. If they ever come to audit it, they want to make sure that that space that you're using for your business is only storing items for your business. You don't want to be storing personal items within there that could be deemed non-business related and mess the whole thing up.
Interesting.
Don't move your business into your bathroom.
There you go. That's right.
Yeah, no matter how big it is.
Or the guest room.
Or the guest room. Yeah. We talked about this on past episodes. This is a common topic. And our advice is, look, I can't give you advice about your space and what you can do, but you can always ask. Just ask an attorney, account expert, what you should be deducting. You know, Mark, it's hard to believe. And I know this is going to shock you, but I am inching up to retirement age. Now, for me personally.
25 more years.
That's right.
Keep buttering me up. It really is good. Now, for me personally, I've had the good fortune to be employed for 25 years by a great company, eBay. So I actually have a pretty good retirement plan. But what about self-employed business owners?
Yeah. So the onus is really on them as a self-employed business owner to kind of make the move and start planning for retirement as well. You know, there may be multiple ways of doing that. I'm not going to sit here and say that one which way is good, but the tax laws allow you to basically set up a retirement account as a business owner. Why not prepare for retirement? Because, you know, as you said, it's going to come for everybody at some point. So we might as well think through the process of, hey, what should we do to contribute some of those profits to really like a self-employed retirement plan overall? Because, you know, those contributions are tax deductible. It helps you lower your tax bill each year, and then it also helps you save for retirement. So it's just it's kind of a win-win overall.
There's tons of different, there's a few different investing instruments for retirement funds, and some of them can actually work to your benefit, like a Roth as opposed to a regular IRA where you pay taxes beforehand and not when you withdraw. You know, in mine, I have to pay taxes when I withdraw because I work for a big fat company.
That's right.
I think they've got the Roth 401k now, but it came late. You know, those long in the tooth like you and me.
Well, I don't mind. When I withdraw money, I won't be working at eBay anymore. I'll have definitely a lower income. I'll be in a lower tax rate. So I actually get taxed at a lower rate than I would have before. So it actually makes sense.
Yeah, that's true.
It all depends on your situation, right, Mark?
That's right. Right. It depends on everybody's situation.
Yeah. I think the key one there is start early and take advantage of the things that you can as a small business and preparing for retirement.
Earlier, Mark, we talked about what is and maybe isn't deductible. What are write-offs? Are they the same as deductions? And if not, how do they differ?
Yeah, so the IRS treats some deductions differently from others. For example, equipment. They have this thing called Section 179 deduction. So Section 179 allows you to write off the full purchase price of expensive equipment and to reduce your liability. There are more strict rules on those things. Like, it may be in a situation where Section 179, you can write off anything, and then you hear a word like depreciation, where depreciation, they say, hey, you know, we maybe don't want to necessarily have you write off everything right away, but we'll let you write off your computer over 5 years. So that's when you're getting into tax planning some more to say, hey, is it more beneficial for me to write it all off now or write it off over 5 years overall? But as it relates to those strict rules, you know, equipment must be used for business purposes more than 50% of the time. You have to actively used in the current financial year, and it has to be purchased outright. There's also this, I know not a lot of people are going to run into it, but there's this $1 million limit on the amount you can write off as well. So
damn,
that's pretty lofty, and it's not really going to impact too many folks. Yes, that's right. That's right. But overall, you know, an expense is an expense. There's just different kind of strict rules around whether an advertising expense gets as much scrutiny as a depreciation or a Section 179 expense.
So this Section 179, is this what a lot of people are using when they start bragging about, I bought this truck for my business and I'm able to write it all off this year?
To a point, yeah, to a point. Yeah. The IRS and Congress, you know, overall has had this thing called bonus depreciation. And bonus depreciation, pretty much through the last almost 5-10 years, is allowing you to write off at 100% the entire value as well. I think that's starting to dwindle down here, though, with everything going on. But nonetheless, you hear that a lot. I'm buying this nice truck, really needed for my business, which is great and good. And it's a chance to write a big event off to lower your taxes.
But it's at 50% of use. So, you know, the other 50% I can show off.
Yeah, you have to be a little careful.
Truck.
Right. That's right.
Look at my Hummer.
Mark, are there other options for writing off expensive business equipment?
Yeah. So I actually touched on a little bit was the bonus depreciation. So the IRS actually allows you to do different methods of that to touch on it a little bit further. So we talked about Section 179. And then now you have either regular depreciation. So as a computer, right, you have 5 years. Typically, it's 5 years you can depreciate that over. Or they offer what's called bonus depreciation that lets you claim more of it faster. So it could be 100% bonus depreciation all right away. Like, let's claim it all in 1 year. Could be 50% depreciation where you can claim 50% of the cost of the computer right away. And then you depreciate the rest over 5 years. I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of different ways of doing things that the IRS provides and really, the, you know, our Congress provides overall, which can make things a little bit confusing. But nonetheless, that's an example around it. To throw out one more example, why not throw out one more? High-grade security system. I don't know if a lot of people have those for protecting that the property you have.
Oh.
But if you're thinking about writing that off in the first financial year, bonus depreciation will allow you to write off either 50% of that or 100% of that potentially right away. $25,000 or $50,000, or if that system's depreciated over 10 years, you can write off $5,000 per year over 10 years.
That touches on something interesting for our regular sellers. There's all kinds of expenses that go into managing their business.
Especially if it's a separate location from your home, because you're not there to monitor it. Mark, I recently heard mention of a type of business deduction called, I think it's QBI.
QBI.
And I have no idea what it is. Do you?
That's right. So it's qualified business income is what QBI stands for overall. And it is a deduction. And where a lot of your expenses fall on the Schedule C, it actually falls right before your taxable income line on the Form 1040. What QBI allows you for is a 20% tax deduction on your qualified business income. A simple terms, like for most sellers, your qualified business income is your profit. Right? At the end of the day, that's your net profit after expenses. And to qualify for this deduction, there's a simple method and there's a way too much time to talk about whether you qualify for the long method. But for the simple method, your taxable income needs to be $170,050 or less as a single filer. And then as a joint filer, because, you know, they don't want a marriage penalty for people being married, the threshold is $340,100. So it is really nice that, hey, if my net profit is $10,000 on my business, I can have $2,000 of that written off against my taxable income.
And then you take the remaining $8,000 and you put it onto the Schedule C where you then can apply all your other deductions against it?
No. So all that will come first.
Okay.
So to apply it's all your net. Other deductions against it gets it to $10,000 as your net profit, like that final line on the Schedule C.
It's known as the cherry on the cake of your tax return.
That's right. That's
your little present.
Well, these are some sure great tips, Mark. Do you have one last tip for small sellers?
Yeah, it's just prepare, right? Prepare for the tax season. We're here. we're in the process of getting our records together and making sure we're ready to file by the dates, as we mentioned earlier. But March 15th, that's S-Corps partnerships. Those are the what we call the pass-through entities. So their filing deadline is March 15th, which 2.5 months. We're really not that far away from it. And then April 18th, and I'm saying the 18th this year because it falls on a weekend. And then April 17th is this DC emancipation holiday overall. So you get a few extra days for those that need it. But that's your personal or single member LLC return is due for that deadline.
Well, I'm ready. Are you, Brian?
No.
I shouldn't have brought it up. Well, Mark's ready. He's always ready. Mark, you're always
great information.
We would assume you're always up front and ready with your taxes, right?
Oh, it's pretty well ready to go. You know, I wait on a few items that I'm waiting on right now, but at the end of the day, it's ready to go.
Mark, I want to thank you again.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. This was really interesting information.
Yeah, absolutely. Great to be here.
Mark Yeager is Vice President of Operations at Tax Act. We'll put a link, as we always do, to the eBay Tax Act splash page in the summary overview for this episode, which is episode 224, as posted in community at www.ebay.com/podcast.
You got questions?
We've got answers. Brian, our first question is from seller Kathy, who emailed this to podcast@ebay.com. Hey guys, love your podcast. I just opened my eBay store about a year ago, and I've learned a lot from your weekly sessions. Thank you. How important is your username? And is there any way to change it? My username was automatically generated several years ago when I sampled the eBay marketplace as a buyer. And when I opened my store last January, it never occurred to me to set up a new account. I figured my store name was more important. When I listen to your podcast, you always mention the seller usernames. My username is CatherineWalls-6, which just doesn't lend itself well to marketing. My store name is Groovy Postcards, and I sell antique and, vintage postcards. I know how you feel, Griff, about the word vintage, but I manage a couple of postcard Facebook groups, and we have new members answer questions to be able to join. And when asked what type of postcards they collect, at least 85% of them say vintage postcards. Oh, jeez. Well, Kathy, I acknowledge that I'm losing the war on the misuse of the word vintage.
Losing?
Yeah.
I think that battle is almost lost at this point, Griff.
Wait a minute.
I think we have it on the site.
Yeah, we do. It's actually in one of the categories, but precision in language may seem to you, Brian, a trivial hill on which I have chosen to stake my life. But to my mind, it is a very noble hill.
Spoken like a vintage boomer.
I am what I am. So, Kathy, although a memorable user ID is not critical for business success on eBay, it really doesn't hurt to have one that's memorable. That's the important part.
And, Kathy, you can change your user ID, but only once every 30 days.
Yeah. So if you changed it and you didn't like it, 30 days later, you could change it again. And your new username automatically replaces your old username wherever it appears on eBay. All your member and account information, including your feedback, it'll all be transferred to your new username. So the old one disappears.
And your old username can't be used by anyone else on eBay for 30 days. An icon will appear next to your username for 30 days after you change it. What new user ID should Kathy consider?
I always recommend that a seller's user ID be as close as possible, if not identical, to their store name. Just easier to remember, right? So with that in mind, Kathy, if you haven't done so already, you might want to try changing it to, I don't know, maybe Groovy Postcards, all one text string. And if that name is already taken, maybe a variation of it, like Groovy Hyphen Postcards or Groovy Asterisk Postcards, or I don't know. You can come up with different variations.
Yeah, I think that's some really good advice. I know some sellers who do that, where they get the username and their store name, and then they have an Instagram account or a Facebook account. They look at it as a brand.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what she wants to do, obviously.
Yes.
So she's not going to rest until she gets that user ID that's going to work for her store.
And she can also change her store name.
And you can change your store name as many times as you want. One caveat about changing your store name, though. You know what it is?
No.
It's a sticky one. When you create your store, when you open it, it creates a store URL.
Yes.
If you change your store name, the URL doesn't change. It'll still direct to your new store with the new name, but the URL will have your old store name in it.
Yeah. So think hard about what your store name is going to be.
So even though you can change it easily, Brian, I would not recommend changing it. If you can get away with it and just change your user ID.
And Kathy, if you wish to, you can change your username in the personal information section of my eBay.
Yeah, and it's easy to find. There's two ways to get to it. If you go to my eBay account and then personal information, there's a link there. The other way is to go to help and contact. Just type in change my user ID and then you'll find the there's actually a link. And there's a link, and I'll post that link to the actual change user ID page in the summary overview for this episode. Our next question was emailed to podcast@ebay.com by seller Terry, who writes, well, why don't you read this?
I sell a fair amount internationally using eBay's international delivery system. Most of the time, an international package goes to an eBay processing center, and then eBay forwards the package internationally. I notice when I ship to Canada that when I select eBay International Standard Delivery, sometimes my package goes to an eBay address. For me, it's a P.O. box in Elk Grove, Illinois. But sometimes the label generated is a regular USPS international label that I sign and date as a sender, and the package goes directly to Canada. What is the difference? I noticed that a recent sale for $11.09 went direct to Canada, but a sale to Canada after that for $29.99 went to Elk Grove. Is the value of the package the deciding factor or some other reason? Can I assume the same seller protections apply whether the package goes directly to Canada or to an eBay center as long as the label is generated after I select eBay International Standard Delivery? Thanks for all the helpful content on the podcast, Terry. Well, Terry, so we contacted the shipping team for clarification, and they informed us that when a seller selects International Standard Delivery as a shipping option for an international sale, eBay uses a logic based upon the price and the speed of all shipping options to determine if shipping to the International Standard Delivery Hub is the better option or not. The better option determined by the algorithm is then displayed to the seller at the point of label purchase when they print the label for the transaction. And best of all, the same protections afforded by International Standard Delivery apply for all orders shipped through eBay International Standard Delivery, even if the option we show for that label is regular international shipping.
Yeah, I was confused myself when I read this from Terry, and I got into a conversation with the shipping team, and I thought, well, is the seller presented with the option? You can send it this way or this way through International Standard Delivery. And Stephanie on that team said, no, it's actually we make the selection, and it is based on the cost of shipping and the item value and what's going to be fastest. So if it turns out that just shipping it across the border USPS is going to be faster, then that's the option that'll be there. But it still is considered an eBay International Standard Delivery.
It's kind of part of that program because that was the intent of the seller when they selected it.
Exactly.
So fascinating that he noticed that difference because I probably wouldn't have.
Oh, I think sellers would notice that difference, yeah.
And really good clarification.
You know, one of the things that's fun about this job, and I know you agree because we've talked about this, is as much as people think we know, there's a vast desert of information out there that we don't. And every week we find out something. Some seller will ask a question like this, and I'm thinking, I have no idea what the answer is. I've never heard of this before. But also, lucky for us, we have access to a really good team or good teams. Yeah.
Whether it's shipping or promoted listings or whoever, they're always responsive. Well, our next question is about the advice we provided in episode 221 regarding Google shopping. Seller Barbara sent this to podcast@ebay.com. Hi, B&G.
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 We've been reduced to initials. And your initial is first, I want to point out. B&G.
As it should be every other time.
There you go.
No. Maybe every fourth time. I appreciate your segments on best practices for eBay titles, so they are more likely to show up on Google searches. In them, you mentioned taking out unnecessary symbols, tildes, at symbols, etc. Does that hold true for diacritics as well? For example, if an artist's name is André François, is it better to add the diacritics or just English a fly it as André François without the little accent? If searching for André François, will André François without the diacritic also show up? Thanks again for your very informative podcast. It should be required listening for anyone selling on this platform. Well, thank you, Barbara.
Well, I agree. How do we make it required? You will listen to this podcast. You must follow the orders for listening to this podcast. Well, Barbara, I don't think we could make it required, but thank you for that vote of confidence. So this is an interesting question. Whenever we suggest something like, don't use these, and I know when I looked back on the transcript for the episode, we did say extraneous. So don't use extraneous punctuation. Like some people will use it to dress up. And we use look. L@k with an exclamation point is probably the most glaring and ridiculous example. That kind of use of punctuation will get your item blocked in the Google shopping feed. But the key word here, Barbara, was extraneous. So if the diacritic accent over the E in Andre is part of his name, including it is a good idea, or not including it, it doesn't matter either way. So if the punctuation is actually a part, it's not extraneous, it's a part of the word or the phrase, yeah, then include it. And you can do the search yourself and see that if you leave out the diacritic accent on E for André François, that it will turn both versions of them if some of those titles have either or version. It's the extraneous punctuation that you want to avoid. Lines of exclamation points or, you know, a row of tildes, the little...
Right.
So, you know, people do this. It's like ASCII art from the 80s, you know?
And they think it's fun or it might draw attention, but it really doesn't.
It's really unprofessional.
Right.
It is as rank amateur as you can get as a seller. I don't think you can get any more rank amateur.
But I guess the guidance is if the name includes it and it's the actual name of the item being sold or the brand, you would include it.
When it comes to diacritics, I think my own experience has shown that search engines will do both. They won't assume that if you've typed in André with the diacritic accent over the E and then François, that it's only going to return those that have the accent. It'll return anything with an E. So diacritics, I think, are a special case. But you wouldn't necessarily use diacritics like that to dress up your text.
No, you shouldn't.
You couldn't do it. Yeah, it's not like, it's not ASCII.
It's not like your example of look with the two.
You know, it was in use when I first discovered eBay back in May 10th of 1996, and I was looking at listings, so many titles that had look in it. And I, being a contrarian and not a follower of rules, immediately will not look at your listing. It said look, and I said, no, I'm not looking. You're demanding that I look. No. So it's not a good practice. But Google Shopping definitely doesn't like it. So, Barbara, I hope that answered your question. You know, these questions are so much fun.
They are. And educational, as you said, for our listener and us.
And us, of course.
And if you want to join the fun here on eBay for Business, call us on 888-723-4630.
That's 888-723-4630. I'm going to be frank with you. We don't get a lot of calls these days, and I love to get the calls. Call that hotline any time of the day, any day of the week. There's a voice line where you can leave a message, leave a question or a comment, and listen, we'll put it on the air at this point. We're desperate.
And if you're not a call-on-the-phone person, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
And I know you probably were hoping they'd go away, but no, they're back after their holiday break, your weekly podcast reminders.
Numero uno. Check the announcement board at ebay.com/announcements for up-to-date seller news every day.
Number two, there is no time like now to finally invest in a thermal printer. Not only will it speed up your shipping operations and save you money on ink and toner, it'll save on printer paper too. But because it's thermal, it will keep you warm in cold weather.
I don't think that's true, Griff.
It is like thermal underwear, thermal printer. It is true. It is, I'm pretty sure it's true, I think.
You have to have a really big thermal printer.
You know what they say? Big thermal printer, no cold nights in the winter.
He's losing it.
Yeah, slowly but surely.
Number three, need to review anything in this episode? It's easy. Check the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard and to find the links we referenced during the episodes.
And on our next episode, we're going to focus on your questions again.
We'd like to again thank our guests this week, Mark Yeager of TaxAct, and the queen of auctions, Lynn Drawley.
The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn, Podcast 411.